tales of hope.
I'm Jeremy Greer.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this is Days of Future Cast, the podcast where we go into an alternate universe, dress up in different clothes, and pretend we're different people, and forget all about our normal motivations.
What does alternate universe Jeremy wear?
Mostly like tracksuits. Like a lot of tracksuits. Like a lot of Adidas matching tracksuit situation. I've got one for every day of the week plus holidays. So
yeah.
Yeah. Catch me on Christmas in my green and red, man. I'm fucking tight, let me tell you.
Yeah. Got no problem with that. Drip.
What about you?
Seems Riz.
You wear tracksuits all the time, so I'm assuming that alternate Gary doesn't wear tracksuits. What are you rocking?
So ordinary Gary wears pajama pants and nothing a lot of times while recording. Alternate universe Gary dresses in a full tuxedo.
Okay.
Recording. Yeah. Very, very formal. I feel like, you know, you dress for the job you want, and the job I want is parking cars at an Italian restaurant.
Yes. Absolutely.
So I dress up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is what I think whenever I see somebody really dressed up now.
Just a valet like, just at an like Italian restaurant.
At a restaurant. Yeah.
Did they have valets like at the Olive Garden when you grew up? Is that where this is coming from? Is that a thing? No.
Just walking around downtown and seeing them.
Gotcha.
You know? Okay. Down there. When I see somebody very dressed up now, I feel like my initial thought is clown. But that says more about me than anything else.
Probably so. We're back. Yeah. We're going to talk about more about Age of X. We're on chapter 3, which is technically the fourth issue of this crossover event where things are haywire with the X-Men and we still don't quite know why. All we know is that the humans are after all of the mutants. Magneto has created this fortress. It's protected by force fields. We're going to get into some of that conversation here in this issue about how those force fields work. And unfortunately, some people have gone rogue. Namely, Rogue has gone rogue.
Yeah.
Just realized
Gone Reaper.
Talking in the same cadence that Alex from Taskmaster talks, so I need to drop this immediately. So gotta stop this.
She's found out some secrets. Things are unraveling. Little glitches in the Matrix are happening. She has found Kitty Pryde, and more importantly, found Professor Xavier.
Yes.
Kind of got bumped back into realizing how things are wrong. And the last episode, she's on the run, and the Moonstar cadre, or whatever it's called, has been sent after her, who on the cover are portrayed as a bunch of like fun-loving teens.
They look like they're having a great time, man. Like this is looks
they're
like
having a wonderful time.
Just a little murder cadre. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But they are supposed to be serious shit in this.
And we're gonna,
she's on the run.
We're going to start out with Gambit's narration as he and Dazzler, probably?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely Dazzler.
Yeah, that's Dazzler.
They're part of the groups defending this fortress against the humans. So they're just basically shooting.
This is Magneto thinking, not Gambit.
Okay. Sure. Yep.
Because later he thinks about it and he brings up the same line.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm just so used to purple, the purple being Gambit, like that's Gambit's
color. Should be Gambit.
Yeah.
No, I mean you're not wrong. It's just it's a weird little bit of semiotics.
It didn't make sense that he wasn't talking in his accent in his head, and I just made me think that he was fake. So
I assume that when Gambit's internal monologue is just pictures more than anything. Like there's not really words. They're just images of snacks he'd like to eat.
Just pictures of Penthouse comics, like just naughty drawings from the Penthouse. Magazine,
yeah, Tijuana Bibles and food he'd like to eat.
There you go. Yeah,
is the main thing. Like whenever is like he's immune to psychics.
So this is Magneto chat talking. Excuse me, just basically asking like, how can these things become routine? Like this pattern that they're in, where they wake up, they're assaulted, they defend themselves, and then they just start it all over again. And then as he's watching his ostensibly like his protection, his protectors, right? Like the people that are protecting him, his troops, just slaughter a bunch of humans.
Yep. And with this little quote, no gap in a fortress can be considered small.
Yep.
That's going to come back later. We cut over to the Moonstar cadre, who is in the aftermath of Rogue's escape. There is some weird background art that happens.
Clown Mutant? Who is that guy?
Who's Clown Mutant? Who's the gnome? There's a garden gnome.
Who's the garden gnome mutant? Who's the clown mutant? Yeah. Who are any of these people? I gotta know.
Who's Tuxedo Mask?
Who's Tuxedo
Later,
Mask?
There's just a freestanding baby, that's just walking around with everybody. later. Again, little hints that this is being created by somebody making up on the fly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Clown meeting with the tiny hat is maybe just absolutely perfection for me.
It's beautiful. These are some beautiful fuck ups. Santa Claus is there. You know Santa Claus?
Yeah.
Santa Claus is there.
Santa Claus is here, sure. Why not? Yeah.
And Santa Claus, the first mutant. So the important thing here for the plot is that Rogue has taken Chameleon's powers and Domino's powers.
Yes.
There. And she's being smart. I like this detective shit. Like, she leaves a trail of blood going up the stairs, but Moonstar sees right through it.
Yeah.
You know, that is too convenient. She's been going deeper. This is there to throw us off the track. She's going somewhere beneath where she will feel safe.
Right into Wolverine's arms. And this Wolverine, yes, we should note, has been hit with the mutant cure. Like, that was one of the things that, yes, kind of set off this whole war thing that we saw in the first issue. So his powers don't work anymore. And he spends a lot of time cutting himself open to see if they will work eventually, which seems like a bummer of an existence to me. But what do I know about being Logan? I don't know.
This
a
is
lot.
A depressed Wolverine.
Yeah, this is a very depressed. Yeah. This is a depressed badger that we're under on our hands.
Yes. But he's still a good guy, and he's going to take her in.
Yes.
You know, cut over to Magneto, and Magneto gets confronted by somebody we've only seen so far. We haven't been introduced to, which is Moira McTaggart, in this, who is not acting like herself.
No.
You know, what was that assault? Why are we not out killing Reaper and everything? Again, while there's just a baby wandering around.
There is just a baby wandering
around
in the foreground.
You know, it's this big butt baby?
Yeah, just, oh my God, yeah, in between Legion's legs in the top right. Like, it's just a,
yeah,
just a baby with an umbilical cord coming out of its chest.
Yeah.
What is happening in this world?
It's fresh baby. Also, in the background, there's another gnome in the top panel, looks like, on the left.
Perfect.
Yeah, very weird. You know, basically, Moira is like, this has to be ended right away. This isn't acceptable. And Moria says, send the Force Warriors after them. They'll just look over the entire fortress molecule by molecule led by Legion. And this is cool Legion with the hunky, shirtless leather pants, mohawk.
This is normal reality Gary that we're looking at right here. When I'm picturing, yes, when I pictured you podcasting, so this is pretty much the look.
This is exactly what it looked like.
Good, 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 good.
Yeah. And Magneto, this is very important for later. You know, he's like, we'll do this and no innocents will be harmed. I give you my oath. And Magneto says, there's no one whose word means more to me, you know, but I won't risk you. Like, he reveres Legion.
Yes.
And Magneto says, we can't do that. However, consider her caught because I'm joining the hunt.
Yes. Magneto joins the hunt in exactly. Huge Bloodborne voice.
Yes. The Magneto for Smash.
Rogue is getting doctored up by Logan, who is like, how are they not found you? And she's like, I've got luck, but it's, you know, Domino's luck, so it's the good stuff, it's the good quality stuff. And she kind of tells him, like, I know what's inside your mind, I know what you've been doing with that knife, but, you know, she didn't specifically like call him out or ask for it. And she tells him, like, hey, I'm chasing this idea, like, I think that there's something weird going on. I feel like there's something, like, when I touched that professor, I knew who that was, and like, there was something in my mind that I felt I should know that I don't know, like, something's at work here that I don't quite know. And they're kind of interrupted in the middle of this by, of course, the Moonstar's cadre, because
There's a bit real quick that's important before this, where when she talks about, she says she had a voice in her head when she met Xavier that told her to smash the fortress. And he says, that's impossible. Everyone knows that there are no mutant powers that can affect the mind.
Yes.
This is we conspicuously haven't seen straight up psychics.
Yeah.
We've seen Karma and Vertigo, but no Emma Frost, no Jean Grey, nothing like that. No Rachel Summers, and this is when they get interrupted by the Moonstar cadre.
Valam, yeah, as the sound effects say in the, yeah, comic books.
Yes.
But they've already left. Oh, I'm sorry, we're not even going to get to that. We're going to switch back over to Madison Jeffries, where Magneto confronts him and is basically like, hey, homie, I know you did something. What the fuck did you do? Like, yeah, because
he threatens him really nastily.
Yeah, here. Like, he basically says, like, I could take away all of your toys. Like, I could turn this into a storage facility, which seems mean. Like, you gave this guy a telescope, and now all of a sudden you need space to put your toilet paper somewhere? Like, what gives?
You're using these things to try to remain human. Like, you're losing your humanity with your machine meld. I will take that from you.
Yeah.
If you don't cooperate. And he fesses up, you know, basically. And then, again, like a little twist thing, he says, one final question and we're done. And we don't see that question.
Yeah.
This is, you know, as we mentioned, Magneto's got some irons in the fire.
Meanwhile, back at Logan's place, Logan is standing on this very conspicuous, like, trap door as they begin to question him. It's like, she's here. She has to be here. You know, maybe you can move. And, like, they're bucking at each other, basically. Like, I'd like to, you know, am I going to have to make you move? I'd be interested in seeing you try, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, of course, our girl, Danielle, Moonstar just deceased right through this. Like, no. This is obviously him trying to bait us into something, and she's already gone. She's already out of here. Like, there's blood over here. We're going to follow this different trail.
Yep. I like the detective work.
Me too.
She's heading for the front lines. So they call Cannonball, you know, the leader of the general, and say, like, she's heading your way, apprehend her. And he basically says, like, yeah, we'll add to the list.
Yeah.
Like, we can't do that. We're fighting, you know, humans.
We have a lot of shit we're going to do. They chase her down. They use dust to basically, like, slow her down, and then Moonstar shoots an arrow and hits her, like, in the back of back of the shoulder.
And to show her, you can see her cape because dust, you know, hits her with it. Yeah. It's the same thing they do in the Dunwich Horror. You throw some dust on something invisible.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But they hit her. They're going to fucking kill her.
They're just going to murder this chick. But, of course, she's still carrying Domino's luck. And right as they're about to kill her, who shows up? But some humans in a giant fucking weird tank. I love the weird tank designs in this so much. The fact that they're not supposed to make sense, it makes it even better for me. I just love it.
Yeah, yeah. It's real good there. They make short work of the tank here. I like Doug Locke talking to the machines again. You know, smart bombs. Why are they called that when they're docile and can be persuaded, and makes the bombs blow up inside the tank.
Yeah.
But this gives Rogue time to get away. And Danny says, I'm not worried about it because Dust is still with her.
Yep. You know. X calls over to Magneto. We still don't really know what or whom X is. It's just this, like, kind of voice.
Disembodied voice.
Yeah. Saying that Legacy has been found, alive or dead. She's still alive for now. And as Dust, it comes up on her, as, you know, Rogue is wounded. She's got a little bit of a healing factor, it looks like, from Wolverine, which is kind of a big deal, I think. Like, it's not subtle at all, but, like, it's a pretty interesting way to present, like, oh, Wolverine still has some of his powers. But as Dust is about to kill her, who saves her but our old friend Gambit?
Yep. By shooting a bullet in her and then exploding it.
Yeah.
Sending her, you know, he's like, you've got plenty of other places to be, sending her particles everywhere. You know, and Gambit also has, he didn't get touched by any of the stuff, but he also has that, you know, that inkling. He's like, I just saw you in a fight. I knew I'd want to be on your side of the fight.
Yep.
You know, I don't know what's going on, but I remember this connection.
Exactly. Yeah.
We cut back to Magneto watching them, and he goes back to that, you know, no gap in the fortress can be considered small, and our fortress is very, very fragile. You know, it cannot endure. And he says, you know, tell Moonstar to call off the hunt, and he buries Gambit and Rogue in rubble.
Yep.
Basically saying, this is how traitors die here. Making a big public execution of them.
And, you know, giving everybody the sign of, like, this is how we deal with traitors, right? Like, this is, and trying to make sure that this fortress that he's trying to hold together with an iron fist is actually holding together, trying to make sure that nobody has any doubts about it. Unfortunately, we go back over to the Rat Run Cafe, which is Wolverine's home base, where he is in a meeting with, what's Cyclops' name here?
Basilisk.
Basilisk? I keep thinking Berserker.
Yes.
Where he's in a meeting
Berserker.
With Basilisk. They're basically doing that same thing that we'll see them do later on in House of M, which is like, hey, do you feel something weird's happening? Yeah, I feel something weird's happening. Do you feel something weird's happening? Oh, okay, cool. I guess something weird's happening. They both feel like they're not in the right reality at this point.
Yeah, to team up. This made me really miss this dynamic between Cyclops and Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I like Cyclops and Wolverine that are at odds. You know, I think that, like, with the whole, you know, division, you know, Divided We Stand and Jean Grey School stuff, it went too far.
Sure.
You know, like, we talked about that. Like, I think Wolverine just being like, you know, Cyclops, you're the worst person on Earth is real weird. What with all the X-forcing he's done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all the killing he's done. And then now that they're just like buddies and they're sharing Jean Grey, like, there's not enough tension. I really like this version of them. It's the same version that's in the Grant Morrison new X-Men run, where, like, they just trust each other a lot.
Yes.
You know, they know each other as being very capable. They're not necessarily friends, but they've just got, you know, this mutual respect.
Yeah, they both acknowledge the how good the other one is, right? Like, I really appreciate that dynamic. And even in the movie, sometimes, like, it's presented as, like, Wolverine doesn't trust, because usually Cyclops is much younger than Wolverine, almost always much younger than Wolverine, even without, like, the weird history of Wolverine. But, like, he's just he's the newcomer. But I like it when they get to the point where they just kind of naturally trust one another to do the right thing.
Yeah. I really like competent Cyclops.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah. So it's nice to see it again. And the idea, you know, everyone's turning against it. You know, everybody is realizing something's wrong.
Yes.
You know, the center cannot hold. And we're going to watch it fall apart in the next couple issues. It's not a long crossover. We have five more issues, two of which are weird little side stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
which are
still kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Super fun, I think. Mike Carey writes all of this, even though it's ping ponging back and forth between two titles here. Other people were writing New Mutants at the time, but he took over for this. This is very much his story.
God, I'd be so mad if I was like writing the New Mutants and they'd be like, Mike Carey was like, hey, I've got like six issues of your book this month or like this year.
I'm just going to take care of
it. Yeah. I got half your work this year. Like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah. I was browsing, this series, this New Mutants series, and it's not constantly getting, sidetracked for the shit. You know, that always happens, but every other issue is like Fear itself, Regenesis. Oh, man. That's
such a bummer.
You know, Necrotia. Like it is a nonstop event roller coaster. Like this title never had a chance.
You gotta feel bad for like the writers who get put on this job to like, you know, write, who genuinely want to write Marvel comic books and probably have a huge affinity for these characters, and like I've been waiting for
a
years
to
give my shot, and like I have this story, and then all of a sudden I have to tie it into, I don't know, Magneto has a hangnail or something. Like, I gotta figure out how to.
100%. The first time I remember hearing about that, like the very famous example of that is Peter David,
mm-hmm,
during the 90s with his X Factor run, which is like really good. The you know, the Havoc X Factor, that original one, getting sidetracked for shit. So if you read those crossovers at the time, many of which I'm like a big fan of, it's like Executioner Song, that shit. His issues are really awkward and barely tie in.
Yeah.
Because he had other stuff he was working on. Like he did, you know, he does not care for these distractions.
I started, it's sad. I started his X Factor last night, the 2019 version, I think.
Okay.
Which is pretty interesting so far. Like it's Polaris and Gambit and, Quicksilver and the Saber group, like the corporation that's sponsoring everything. It's pretty interesting. I like Peter David's writing, especially on X Factor in general.
Me too.
So, I've only read like three issues, and then I was like, oh, my body, it's exhausted, and I have to go to bed because I'm old. And it was a good what I read of it. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us ramble about the X-Men. We very much appreciate it. If you want to support the show, ratings and reviews are easily the best way to do it. Tell your friends, your family, your coworkers, your cousins, your nephews, your step-uncles, everybody in your family. Tell them all about the podcast. You can also support us directly by going to patreon.com/duckvtv and donating a little bit of your cash. That goes a long way to supporting the network, and you get all kinds of exclusive content, including the new Baldur's Gate 3 podcast, which is called Real Lich Hours, coming from Gary and Cole, which I'm very excited about. It's from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's basically like a bonfire side chat style look into probably one of the most in-depth CRPG games ever created, right? Like this is one of the craziest games that has ever been made.
It is one of the deepest games, I think, that have ever come out, like in terms of detail and player reactivity. It's different than Bonfire Side Chat. That was the original idea, but it's actually pretty different than what we do normally. So like there's a segment of each episode that is a let's play that, you know, talks about what we did, but the rest of it is like source book shit. So like, let's take this opportunity to talk about skeletons. Let's this opportunity to talk about this god in the Forgotten Realms. Yeah. Let's talk about this class. Like, how would you tactically use this class in this game? How would you use this spell in this game? Like the first episode is like a history, like episode zero, but the actual first proper episode has like a 10 to 12 minute aside just about the command spell.
Okay.
Like, how do you tactically use this spell? Why is it good? So it's a lot more tactics wonk and lore wonk than that.
That excites me. That,
more zoomed in.
That excites me a lot, because that's, as someone who's new to, who has always had a stumbling block when it comes to these kind of games, like I've just always had a difficulty getting into them, and I'm having the same experience with Baldur's Gate 3, where I've already restarted once, and like I'm doing better than I was before just by having a little bit more familiarity with what's happening. But like the whys and the like, okay, I can do this, but like, why would I want to, and like, when would it be advantageous for me to do so, is something that I'm really missing in all of this stuff. So
hopefully it would help. Like, this is one of the things that it's kind of fun for me and like gratifying, as much as this is, you know, it's a thing I'm a little bit loath to say, but this is, you know, my time to shine when it comes to being good at video games.
Yeah. This is your jam. This is your lane.
This is totally my jam. Yeah. I've got tactics brain. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the same way that there are, you know, people who master Souls likes and shit. I'm not, you know, a master. There are people who played through it with one character on the hardest difficulty. I'm not there yet, but I think about this stuff a lot. You know, like this is what I like to think about in video games. So it's I think it's more fun to talk, or it's easier to talk about than, like, you know, lobosing a Souls game. Mm-hmm. Because so much of that is reaction and reflex. This is tactics. Like, this is like, what are the situations and scenarios in which this might be useful?
Yeah.
And we have a whole section on pushing, you know, eventually that comes up later. Like, it's that kind of thing. Oh,
be my pusher, baby. So, be my pusher, man.
Yeah. Push it real good. The goddamn the pusher, man. yeah. Very excited for that to release. I hope that people like it.
I hope so too. When is that? This is probably, it's probably already out by the time this is coming out.
It's already out by the time this comes out for sure.
Okay.
I don't know the exact date. Okay. Soon, like maybe day after tomorrow as we're recording.
Okay, cool. Okay. Good. So two weeks ago.
Might be Sunday.
So go look for it, everybody. Yeah. It's in your RSS feeds.
Yeah, it's going to be on Sundays. So because it's taking the bonfire size chat slot until we get some DLC news, which suckers.
Didn't happen last night. Didn't happen at the Video Game Awards.
Recording this to the day after the Game Awards, where the games come out to shine.
I sent you a text last night. I meant to tell you not to bother to watch the trailer if it wasn't like your thing, because it was a real nothing trailer. But like, an Arcane making a Blade video game is something that's really, really strange. Like, a third person Blade game from Arcane is something that I did not expect to happen.
I'm way curious. I really want Arcane to, you know, everyone hates Redfall. I really want them to have a win.
Yeah, me too.
Because I need them to keep making games. And I, you know, as a big fan of Spider-Man and very excited about Wolverine, like, giving good developers these properties is, you know, two great tastes that taste great together to me.
Yeah.
I am excited.
Especially after,
and I can see it working for Blade. Like, you couldn't, an Arcane game where you were Superman wouldn't work.
Exactly.
You know, like, it's not, but Blade has to, like, investigate areas, and spaces are where Arcane is best in class.
I will say that dude that's working on the game, I don't remember his name, but it's a French guy that works at Arcane. He came out with the full fucking Blade trench coat and everything, man. That dude is so excited to be making this video game, and that's the energy you want, right? Like, that's like, so that's, you want somebody that's super into Blade to be doing this. So
yes, yeah. Very, very excited.
Yep.
So the in general, like, I wouldn't watch the Game Awards with somebody else's eyes, but I am happy about that announcement.
I kept putting it on last night in between episodes of Better Call Saul, and Autumn would just look at me and be like, what are you trying to make me do? Like,
are
what
are really doing?
Why are you? And it just so happened, like, every time I put it on, it was some weird anime thing, like it's some weird anime, some mobile game with a long anime. Like, she's like, this just looks like garbage. And I'm like, it's because it's an iPhone game. Like, it's just,
yeah. They're constantly talking about Honkai Star Rail.
Yeah. Whatever the fuck that
the
is.
The other thing that's so funny is that they're reading their awards and stuff, and how fully, like, a third of them are esports.
Yeah.
And like, miss me with like just a universe that I couldn't care less about. Like, I know that has its audience, and I'm, you know, no hate, but for me, I could not care less about that. Esports team of the year. What does that mean?
What does that even?
What even video game are they playing?
Like, they had an award for esports coach of the year.
Yeah. It just seems ludicrous to me. Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I can't even like get any radish for like an NFL coach. And I feel like they probably have a more direct impact on the game than an esports coach, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. This is not my lane, so I don't know, but I'm the exact same way. But at the same time, Gary, I would want them to do more an in-depth look at like an esports team and what makes them great than just giving me a commercial over and over again for fucking Fortnite something. Like, I would appreciate that level of video game awards, like looking at video games as opposed to what we have, which is just a fucking commercial. So
it's commercials. Yeah, it's always, you get the same. I've ranted about this many times. You get the exact same thing if you just look at the winners afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
And look at the trailers you're interested in. And then you don't have to subject yourself to all of the Jeff Keighley-ness of it all.
Dude, I happened to turn it on when they brought Hideo Kojima out.
Sure.
And it's I mean, it was just this so dramatic with the PT door. And then, like, Keeley is just, I don't know how he stops himself from dropping on his knees right there and just blowing the guy on stage. Like, he's so close to doing it. Like, I think it's next year it might actually happen just live on stage. And then bringing Jordan, then they bring Jordan Peele out, and everybody is just fucking jerking each other off about everything. And I'm just like, I get it. Like, there's an appeal to me for Kojima and Jordan Peele to be working on a video game together. Like, that's exciting in a way. Like, I am interested in that particular flavor of bullshit. I don't need to see any of this, what I'm seeing right now. Like, I just got to turn this off.
Well, also, I love Jordan Peele. You know, yeah. I'm not a maniac. Like, of course I do. But the idea of video games having to borrow people from other industries to have, like, a kind of prestige they don't have is really stupid.
Yeah, why is Timothy Chalamet there? Like, why was Timothy there last night? What was he doing at the video game awards?
It's a medium that is deeply embarrassed of itself.
Yes, absolutely.
And somehow, you know, it should be, but if it is, it shouldn't act like this. I don't know. There's a whole lot that's irritating about this shit to me.
Also, like, the same thing happens with comic book movies too, right? Like, when you have comic book movies making fun of their names or the comic book outfits or whatever, like, it's the same vibe. It's like, oh,
yes,
you're in the mainstream, so you're trying to think of, like, your source material as you're too cool for it. And that's, most of us are here because of the source material, my friend. Like, this, we all
everyone
like this
will
stuff.
Sniff that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone immediately sniffs that shit out.
Yeah. And it's way cooler just to be into the nerdy shit at this point. Like, you should just acknowledge that people are into this. Anyway, we're on a fucking patreon.com/stuckfeedtv. We love you. We'll be back next week with more Age of X. Jesus Christ. Two old men yelling about video games, the podcast.
That's most podcasts, to be fair.
It's true, yeah.